Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing pretty good there, Justin.
Did you want to address any of the feedback we got from Freddie or H.H. Holmes? Well, on Freddie Gray, we get accused of both sides. Then that means I think we were somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And, you know, they even said that you were pro-cop and I was anti-cop. And I think it just depends on the situation and the case. And by no means I think we're either both pro or anti. It just depends on the situation.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to ride around with that cop in the ride-along if you were...
I really like the guy, too. So, I mean, most of my interactions are pretty positive. I think it was Jenny that wrote in, and she said, I can tell that one of you might be pro and one of you might be anti. As much as I might disagree with that, I at least respect the fact that she saw us as two different people.
Oh, that's a rarity, yeah. We're not the same person talking out of one side of mouth at
a
time.
I mean, everybody else just lumps us together. I wanted to thank Jenny for the comment because it was actually the most unbiased critique I've ever read of our podcast, and I appreciated it. Tonight, we're talking about a case, Scott Peterson. This was big, big news back in the day. What was the date on that? When did this all go down?
Well, the date it actually starts is on December 24th, 2002. And that's in Modesto, California.
Scott is a soon-to-be dad. His wife is pregnant. And it's Christmas Eve. He's going to go on a fishing trip that morning. And she's going to go walk the dog. He leaves. And when he returns home later that day, his wife is missing.
Well, that's a basic summary. But yeah. Before we actually get started, I would like to address those that feel that there were more appropriate cases or cases that needed more attention before we covered this one. The reason why I chose this case was because there's a question here. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into it, but there are accusations and it's now a part of the court process because there's an appeal filed. They don't feel he got a fair trial. Mm-hmm. And there are those that believe not only that, but that he was framed.
Yeah. And there's some parallels between this case and maybe a future case we're going to be covering.
And actually a case we already have covered as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we can go from there. But yeah. I just wanted to let people know there are definite reasons why this case was chosen now.
Yeah.
And it's the different aspects of this case. Whereas some of the other cases that have been suggested, we will cover those, I'm sure, but they didn't have as many angles as this one. So it's not about popularity.
Yeah.
Really, the popularity comes, I think, because at first it tugged on people's hearts when they found out about her being missing. But as it went on, this case just got more and more interesting. So there's a reason it got as big as it did.
Yeah. And I just have to mention that anyone that's read Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn, if she wasn't basing that book off this case, I don't know what she was basing it off of, because it's almost to a T. It just has a different outcome.
From here, we could go by what Scott says.
Yeah.
He says that when he left, that she was curling her hair, that she planned to mop, and that she was watching Martha Stewart.
Mm-hmm. And he gets details. He gets all his details right there. There is a mop bucket out, and there's a curling iron in the bathroom, and he actually says Martha Stewart was talking about like meringue cookies or something, and that checks out.
Right. So, yeah. So far, yeah, all good. And he says he's leaving to go fishing. Now, as far as we know, that's what he told most people.
Yeah.
Is that he went fishing.
Mm-hmm. He loaded his pickup truck with some umbrellas and some other things from the house to store at the warehouse. So he's loading up the back of his truck and he leaves with these umbrellas and a tarp, I think, and goes to the warehouse where then he can unload the truck and hitch the boat with the trailer. So he leaves the house. He gets to the warehouse at around 10:30 in the morning and logs in and checks his email and downloads instructions on how to assemble some kind of woodworking machine. I forgot the name of it. And he actually unboxes this woodworking machine, cuts his hand, bleeds a little bit on his vehicle, then turns around, hooks up the boat.
Right. So he ends up going to Berkeley Marina,
where he gets a landing ticket. It's a ticket that you have to purchase to stick your boat in the water.
So he purchases one.
Yeah, and it's time stamped and everything from the little automated ticket machine. And so he gets there at, I don't know, 11:15-ish in the morning, between driving to the warehouse, hooking up the boat, checking his email, and then the hour and a half drive to the marina. So it's, let's just call it 90 minutes to the marina. He gets there. He goes out on the water and he spends about 90 minutes on the water. He says he trolls up 2 miles, looks at a little island and does some stuff, and really uneventful.
He doesn't even fish though, does he?
He says he does, but he says he's fishing with the wrong lures because he left the other lures in his truck. And that checks out. They were found in his truck and he had other ones in his boat.
But some of his fishing gear, wasn't it still in the package?
Yeah, yeah. And the boat.
So did he have any?
He had a pole. Well, we don't know exactly what he had in the boat because there was no pictures of what was in the boat at the time of him fishing. All we have to go on is what he had in his truck.
So, and that was still packaged.
Yeah. Again, it's just his statements. Most of his statements are actually checking out, though.
Okay. And then what he's fishing for, he's not really able to say, but other fishermen say that you can fish for sturgeon or striped bass.
Yeah. I'm not a fisherman. I don't know where the locations are for these fish. I know that other fishermen do use this marina and bay to go fishing, and it seems to be in line with what he claims he was doing that morning.
So are we ready to talk about what happens while he's gone?
So his wife takes a dog for a walk, right?
Well, that's what he said that she was going to do. Somewhere between 10:18 and 10:40, somewhere in that time frame, give or take 10 minutes in the morning, a neighbor who lives next door, her name is Karen, she spots the dog, which is leashed, just in the street.
Yeah.
Or in their neighborhood.
Running loose.
It's loose. She gets the dog and she puts it in the backyard.
Yeah. And they have a fenced backyard with a gate, and it's not locked. So she's able to just open the gate, lead the dog back in and close the gate. And then the dog is in the yard and he's contained.
But the dog was off by itself.
Yeah. With its leash on, which is kind of odd.
Right.
So Scott goes on a fishing trip. He comes back and he actually calls and leaves a message for his wife. He's heading back at around 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. is what he says. And he actually stops at a Chevron station at around 3:25 p.m. He's got a receipt for it. And he gets home by 4:15, 4:20-ish. And he finds the dog in the yard. He sees his wife's Land Rover. Is that what it is? Yeah, Land Rover. Then he finds his wife's things, like her keys and some of her stuff.
I believe her purse.
Yeah, her purse. And so he thinks maybe her sister or parents came by and picked her up and took her back to their house because he's surprised to see her car there and she's not. So that prompts him to call Ron.
But he doesn't call right away.
No.
He actually washes his clothes.
He removes things out of the washer, takes his clothes off because he says they were wet from his fishing trip, and only washes his clothes. And these were dirty rags. And he says he washes his clothes separately because of all the chemicals he works with at work. So blah, blah, blah. But he's not working with chemicals here. His clothes are simply wet from his fishing trip, but he decides to wash those separately. He also pours out the mop bucket that appears to be unused to him. He said it appears that she didn't do any mopping. And he can't find her, and he takes a shower and
eats something.
Eats pizza. And he says he actually takes the slice of pizza into the shower with him, which that's a little weird, but whatever. But the pizza box is out. So again, lots of his statements are checking out, at least with where he says he is and what he did with receipts and stuff. So that's when he calls Ron or Lacey's parents.
Which is about an hour later.
Yeah.
From the time he gets home and realizes that things are a bit off.
Yeah. And he left a message with Lacey and the answering machine was unchecked. So he heard his own message. That's when he calls Ron. Now, sense of urgency to call Ron, not so much, but I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. Ron is Lacey's stepdad.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, he was basically her dad from the age of 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he was a stepdad, but I just considered him the father.
Right. Her bio dad divorced her mother,
Sharon,
when she was just a baby.
they say Lacey's not with them. And this raises some alarm bells. Scott says he goes around to the neighbors' houses and starts knocking on doors and asking if anyone's seen her. And they notify the police.
Well, Ron makes a call to the police.
Yeah.
He calls 911 to report Lacey missing. And he gives the information she's 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And here, the police do something amazing. Normally, a person has to be missing 24 to 48 hours. And the police immediately respond and file a missing persons report without the 24-hour period and literally jump on this case and start moving and hunting and trying to find Lacey.
They start the search along Modesto's Dry Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's probably based on where they think she might have been walking.
With the dog.
With the dog, because she was supposed to take the dog to a park.
Yeah.
The police go to the Peterson house with a search warrant on the 26th.
So the day after Christmas.
The day after Christmas. But as far as I know, when the police first get there, Scott's very cooperative and lets them go around the house. He goes with them and they go around the house and he lets them look everywhere.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering, was he cooperative?
Yes.
From all the reports and from all the witnesses, at the start, he's very cooperative.
And he shows him his landing ticket. He shows him his receipt from the Chevron gas station that he stopped at. And he even allows them to check his computer to verify that he was sending emails from his work computer at the warehouse. And he even allows them to check out Lacey's computer, where it's claimed she logged in that morning at like 8:40 something in the morning to do online shopping at the Gap.
Yeah, there are multiple computers in the household, and there's one computer that she uses, and it's the only one she uses.
Yeah.
The rest of them are computers that Scott uses.
Yeah. That would be like my household. I have like 10 computers, but Melissa only has one. And it's verified that in the morning, before he left on his fishing trip, that his neighbor, Kristen, came out and he waved good morning to her as he was loading umbrellas into the back of his pickup truck. Where does this come crumbling, crashing down?
At some point, despite Scott's helpfulness, they're thinking about his activities that day, and they're also thinking about things they've seen. And when they're putting it together in their heads, they're starting to become very suspicious of Scott.
He's the last person to see Lacey.
The last confirmed.
Yeah. And he's the spouse. This is a deal. I mean, we always make the joke. Look at the spouse. Look at the boyfriend.
Well, it's not really a joke. It's part of the process.
Yeah.
Since so many people are murdered by people they know. Is it around the 28th that they start searching around that marina?
Yeah. Because they're following Scott's footsteps where he said he was and verified where he was. I think there's a lot of things that kind of sparked their suspicions. I don't know. Like, why would you go on a fishing trip on Christmas Eve?
Well, there's a counterpoint to that. Lacey's stepdad went fishing the same day, probably about an hour later.
Okay.
So he went fishing as well. But to explain this in a way that separates their two activities is that her stepdad, that's his love.
And he's
retired. He loves fishing. He's retired. He loves fishing. It's his passion. Scott is not known to be a fisherman. In fact, it would be a stretch to call him an amateur.
Yeah.
He didn't really know much about lures, and he didn't know much about what type of bait to use, and he didn't know what kind of gear you needed for which kind of fish.
Yeah. And this boat purchase was fairly recent.
He purchased it on the 14th of December, and he purchases a 14-foot boat, and he pays cash for it.
Yeah. Some say that he pays cash for it to conceal the purchase, but at the same time, Lacey knows about the boat.
Or may have known about it.
Yeah, and there's a question there, but I actually think that the boat was fairly... I mean, he's keeping it literally at his work warehouse, so...
All right, let's break this down a little bit. You brought up that she knows about the boat. Well, when she was at the warehouse, she couldn't use the bathroom that she would normally use there.
Okay.
So I don't know if that also meant she didn't get access to where the boat was.
It's possible.
She had to use a different bathroom.
Yeah.
This is something that we know about from a witness. They said mm-hmm. that she ended up having to go to a different warehouse to use the restroom because she couldn't get access to the other one. So for all I know, maybe he had it locked up.
Or the boat was blocking access. We're not too sure. We know that the defense says the warehouse was jam-packed full of stuff, and he couldn't have even backed his truck into the warehouse to hitch the boat up. He had to just back up to the dock door or the warehouse door to do it. So things like that.
Yeah, so we don't really know if she saw it, but we do know that she was there on a day when the boat was there.
Yeah.
But also, there was evidence that he had made homemade anchors.
Yeah.
Now, you can buy an anchor or anchors, but I guess they can be kind of expensive.
They're $30 an anchor, or you can just take a bucket, pour some concrete in it. Boom, you got an anchor.
I have a question. He seemed like a fairly well-to-do guy.
Yeah.
He has a bachelor's in agricultural business from Cal Poly.
They live in Northern California. They have a Land Rover.
There was witness testimony that homemade anchors are a thing, that people yeah. do them because they're cheap and you don't need anything fancy. They get the job done.
Yeah.
But why are you worried about saving a few dollars when you have money? I don't understand that personally.
I get it. He's a miser, maybe. I'm a miser.
Is he a miser?
No.
I don't know.
You know that's the thing is, I get it. I know there was a big deal about the prosecution talking about him using a water pitcher for the mold for the concrete anchor when it was really a Home Depot plastic bucket. Don't really know why that's an issue. He made a boat anchor.
Well, if he can't see what's in front of him properly, maybe he can't see what's literally in front of him.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what they see is there's one homemade anchor present.
Yeah.
And then there are these cement rings from where the other anchors were set down, but those are all gone. There are four missing anchors yeah. that he created. They're 8 pounds apiece, right?
Something like that.
About 32 pounds, roughly.
I heard between 8 and 15 pounds apiece. I mean,
that seems like a large range.
Yeah. There's controversy over it. Some people say that he just made one and that's all we know about. You can't say he made more.
But there are these rings left.
There's evidence of...
In the same area as the one that was set aside.
There's evidence of additional anchors that now are not there. But then he says that he used them in his driveway or something.
I don't understand why this wasn't followed up because yeah. I've seen driveways being laid down or whatever, but I don't know how you could take these homemade anchors that are in the shape of these buckets and use them in your driveway.
You don't. Man. I guess the explanation would be he used the buckets to pour concrete, but you wouldn't mold a boat anchor and then throw that in your driveway because concrete doesn't set to concrete that's already been set. You need right. a steady pour. Also,
that way it all solidifies together.
Exactly. Because otherwise you're making weak points if you're throwing big chunks of concrete into a concrete pour. It just doesn't work. I have some cracks in the back of my patio and on the back of my house. And I said, can I just pour concrete over it? And they're like, no, Justin, it doesn't work that way. Now, I didn't verify that he actually did driveway work at any point during this. I couldn't verify that. So I was sort of just okay, he claims he used it in his driveway, but is there any verifiable source that he put in a new driveway at this same time? I couldn't find it. They do interview some of the neighbors who say they saw Lacey walking around, right? Or do you want to go to something else first?
There's a witness who pulls up next to him and she tries to get his attention to say hi. And I think what alerted her was it seemed to her like the stuff in the back of his pickup truck, some of it looked like it might come out.
Mm-hmm.
So she was trying to talk to him and he stepped on the gas when he could go and he just got out of there really quickly.
His music might have been turned up. His Bon Jovi, whatever, might have been too loud.
She says he saw her. He appeared to not want to talk to her.
Okay. Yeah.
But who knows? She could be that neighbor that no one wants to talk to.
Exactly.
Right? They're like, oh, great. Here comes so-and-so.
Yeah, it's true.
We don't know.
Other neighbors actually say they saw Lacey walking the dog, correct?
There are different reports. Some state that they saw Lacey. There's one person who said that they saw a woman walking a dog and that the woman and the dog fit the description and that two men were basically accosting her, yelling at her, cussing at her. I didn't think too much of this because the woman said it looked like it was heating up and then she decides to go inside of her house.
So she's about to see two men accost a pregnant lady with a dog and she decides to go in her house. Wow. Either that is the worst witness ever or that's the worst witness ever. Whichever way you look at it, either she walked away from what could have been a murder or an altercation of something, or she's making it up. You know, look at Lululemon and the Apple store employees. I mean, some people don't want anything to do with things.
And she was far enough away. She wouldn't have been in the middle of anything. They probably didn't even notice her there.
That's sort of shaky. I don't know if I buy that.
People will give tips that are false. People will give false information, and there's any number of reasons why they would do it. Some people just like to be a part of a case. Now she can go on and tell everyone she knows, oh, I called in a tip. I have a tip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, some of the neighbors actually do say they saw her walking the dog. So it's very possible she did take the dog for a walk. And it's not verifiable that Scott had left before she took the dog for a walk or not, because this is all happening sort of simultaneously.
Well, who knows anything's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
No one's sitting around taking notes.
Like, oh, there she is walking the dog and Scott had just left. I mean, the neighbors aren't that nosy.
In a random, normal day, do you remember most of this stuff?
No.
I mean, I don't.
No.
So anyway, I guess what we're trying to say is there are people who believe they saw her walking after he left.
According to his timeline, yes.
So
today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know, so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
That's why you'll have people say, well, he couldn't have done it then.
Yeah.
Because he left without her. Depending on how you see that, whether you believe those witnesses or not, the dog coming down the street with its leash on, that could either be a sign that, yes, she was abducted or he released the dog.
Yeah.
After he left.
He's cooperating with the police. Most of his statements are gelling. And the search teams are doing candlelight vigils. but he's absent from these?
Yeah, they're making statements. They're pleading with whoever has Lacey to let her go. At one point, one of them says, I think it might be her mother, says, please let her go. Run away from us. We don't care. We just want our Lacey back.
Yeah.
And he's not saying anything. Now, I don't know what to do with that. Some people have pointed out that when he was at a wedding, he grabbed a microphone and talked for like 10 minutes and just did this elaborate speech and was great. And he had no problems speaking in front of people. But again, it's context. This is not a wedding. It's not a great celebration. Who knows?
He would later give an interview stating that this was a strategy on how to deal with the media to get the media more involved, which I don't know how not giving a statement gets them more involved, but that was his statement saying, I didn't say anything, so the media would get involved. Whatever you want to do with that logic, somebody could explain it to me, I'll still disagree.
Yeah. Well, and also at this point, the family's feeling strange because he's not, according to them, he's not looking them in the eyes when he talks to them. He's looking away and he's moving away from them. So he's not taking any hugs and he's not answering any questions from them. It's around January 4th and 5th, they really start checking out the marina. I just need to say that because judging by these possible missing anchors, the fact that he went fishing that day, which was out of character for Scott because he was not a fisherman. If he had gone golfing, like he had originally told a few people that he had gone golfing, that would be explainable because he did enjoy golf.
Yeah.
And he loved going to the country club. So that would have made sense. And of course, some people bring up the fact that, heck, if he hadn't been seen by several people at the marina, who knows if he would have said he was there.
There's multiple statements here. So this is just one of them. He says he doesn't go golfing because it's either raining or too wet. So then he decides to go fishing. Now, when you check the weather reports, wasn't raining that day, but doesn't mean that there wasn't dew or moisture or something that might have made golfing less pleasurable. I don't know.
We don't know because yeah. You and I don't like golf.
Yeah.
So.
But at the same time, if it's not good golfing weather, I don't know how that makes good fishing weather because both are outdoor activities. If it's raining, you don't want to go boating in that. And if it's cold out, you probably don't want to go boating in that either.
Well, this is late in the year in California.
And it's Northern California, and it's cold in Northern California. Southern California, yeah, you guys got 70 degrees all year round. Yeah, I don't want to hear about it. Northern California, it gets cold, really cold.
So it may as well be Portland, Oregon.
It may as well be.
Okay. So another thing that happens, obviously, as they keep diving and searching, and they're using every technique they can. Dive teams are using sonar.
He makes many trips to the marina. Five or six?
I think they say it's five.
Okay. Now, one thing they report on is he uses a different rental car to go to the marina on every trip. That is true, and it sounds really bad, but there is a logical explanation. They've impounded his truck and his wife's vehicle because they're going over them with a fine-tooth comb to see if there's any evidence of a dead body or foul play in the vehicles. So he has to rent cars.
They had bugged his truck.
Yeah.
And because the investigation really has focused on him, like you said, they really want to go over these vehicles and make sure there's
nothing
there. Or if there is something, they want to know about it. In fact, one detective says that when he went over and when Scott was being cooperative, they were going through the vehicles and he opened up and struck it or almost struck Lacey's vehicle with Scott's truck. And Scott came running over with his glove and said, hey, hey, hey. And he was all concerned about his truck getting marked up. So it's just a point to say the detectives are certainly looking at him and thinking he's acting suspicious.
He goes on to sell his wife's vehicle and buy another vehicle, which, again, that looks pretty bad.
I think he buys a Dodge truck.
Yeah, but the explanation is
His truck was still impounded. He got his wife's vehicle back first, and he claims he has to continue doing his job, which he works in fertilizer, so he doesn't want to put fertilizer in his wife's truck or his wife's Land Rover, which is like an SUV. So he sells her vehicle and gets a truck. Now, that's a logical explanation, but that pretty much tells me he's not expecting Lacey to come back either.
He also transforms the nursery into
a storage room.
There are statements that he makes that lead people to think that he is not expecting them to come back.
Yeah.
And it's not just his statements, it's his actions.
But when people say, "Do you think your wife's dead?" he will come back and say, "Absolutely not. Don't say those things." But then he turns around and does these things as if she's gone. He makes statements of, "I lost my wife." He makes statements of, "Will Lacey's family have access to
grief counselors?"
And this is day one, he asks. I mean, come on, man. This is really bad behavior for somebody who's lost his wife and soon to be son.
Yeah, if there was a chance she was coming back, could you imagine the hell he would go through if she saw that he had transformed the nursery into a different kind of room?
Where's your car?
Oh, yeah, and her car's gone. Yeah, it just doesn't. Now, some people say that he needed the money, that yes, the vehicle didn't fit his needs, and he was in a bind because all the vehicles were gone. Now that he got one back, he was going to use it to get a vehicle that would serve a purpose for him.
Sell the boat.
Well, the boat wasn't worth nearly as much money as the Land Rover.
True, but the vehicle he bought to replace the Land Rover was a low-cost pickup truck.
Right, but I think he was thinking it's temporary. I'm just trying to make sense of it from the other side.
Got it.
He's not expecting them back.
No, he's not. I don't know how else you can argue that he thinks they're still alive and going to be found, rescued, whatever, returned.
So it's middle of January when the police inform Lacey's family about Scott being with another woman.
Yeah.
But I want to say out front, this is one of the reasons why people have a problem with this case.
Absolutely.
Because when this woman's revealed, the public really turned against him.
Yeah.
Because up to now, it was basically the police and I think Lacey's family was feeling
a little
like there was a problem here. Yeah. But this is when the public is like, okay, Scott's evil.
He gets slaughtered by the media and public opinion. I guess I feel bad for the guy if he's innocent, but it comes out that he's been having an affair for the last, what, month with a woman named Amber?
Amber Fry. Now, the reason why he meets her is because of his work as a fertilizer salesman. He'll go to sales conferences, and at one of these, he met a woman in, I think it was in October. Anyway, her name is Shawn Sibley, and at the time, she's engaged. And people that are with them, there are a couple of people with them. There's Eric Olson, who works with Scott, and then there's David Fernandez. They are uncomfortable with the conversations these two people are having. But really, when it comes down to it, Scott ends up asking Sean if she has any friends that he could meet. And she comes up with a person named Amber Fry. And she does ask Scott, though, if he's married. And Scott says, no.
Of course not.
But sometime later, she'll end up calling Eric and asking him,
is he married?
And I think this is where she figures it out, because Eric says, ask Peterson.
Yeah.
That's his response. So she kind of feels like something's going on.
Yeah. As soon as he doesn't answer the question, that means yes.
He ends up telling both Sean and Amber that he lost his wife.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, you can go out on YouTube and you can hear all these conversations that Amber ends up recording, because she ends up becoming essentially a mole, and she can get all this information from Scott. Now, does she get him to admit guilt? No. Does she get him to say anything beyond having lost his wife? No. He doesn't give any details. He doesn't say how he lost her or even what that means.
I mean, just imagine that
there's a man, his wife is missing, he's in the limelight, please find my wife. Then it comes out that he has a mistress. Now Amber, the woman he's having an affair with, is shoved into the spotlight. People are asking her questions. They've had an affair for up to a month before his wife goes missing. Now the police are tapping the phone and trying to get Amber to get him to admit to things. And I listened to over an hour's worth of Amber and Scott's call together. There's a book that I read called Spy the Lie, and it's written by a CIA interrogator, and he talks about deception and things that people do when they're trying not to answer a question. Now, I know if you saw the interview with Diane Sawyer or so many interviews that Scott does, people say they think he's lying through his teeth. If you listen to the call that he has with Amber, it's all deflection, it's all evasion, it's all just anything that has to do with his wife's disappearance. He says, once they find her, all will be revealed. And it's an hour-long conversation of him just repeating this. Is, I wish I could tell you, but I can't. He doesn't even say, I can't tell you because the investigators are telling me not to. He doesn't even give that disclaimer.
He doesn't even say, because I don't know anything.
No. He says, I know things and I just can't tell you. But once they find my wife, and she's like, your wife's dead body. And he goes, oh, you know, and he plays it off like, but he says all will be revealed. But nothing was revealed when it was all said and done, was it?
This is where he gets knee deep in trouble. It comes out that during the first vigil they had for her, he was on the phone with her, with Amber, telling her that he was in Paris. He was in the Eiffel Tower as they were celebrating New Year's.
This is a community's come together for his missing wife, and he's on the phone with his mistress telling lies. What a guy.
Well, you could almost get it, but the problem is that his wife's missing.
Yeah.
And you would think he would say, this is too much stuff to deal with right now. How am I going to deal with her too? But he just goes on like everything's cool.
I don't even understand that lie. Like, it doesn't make sense. Makes zero sense to me why he would lie to Amber about something so simple. Just say, yeah, I'm here. We're doing this thing right now. Talk to you later. But instead, he's a compulsive liar.
He has to tell her a lie because how else does he explain he's not celebrating New Year's with her?
Because his wife's missing.
He can't tell her about this. This is the strange thing, is she's going to end up finding out that not only is he married and has a wife that's missing, but that he's a prime suspect.
Yeah.
And that's going to change everything.
She turns against him.
Hence the recordings.
Yeah. And it comes out that he had a few other affairs. Investigators say two more women came out and said they were with him. And as soon as they found out he was married, they got up and left. Now, I didn't find the names of these two women. I didn't think it was that important. But the investigators verify that there's at least three women that Scott had affairs with, including Amber.
Well, aside from all that, what we're really trying to say is that he's lying and he's living another life. So it's going to create problems. And this is where he almost can't help himself.
Well, this is where you see, like with David Cam or Michael Peterson, where you see them doing things on the side, automatically that gives you motive to kill your wife. That's what prosecutors are going to use against you.
Right.
That's the motive.
I would argue, though, that what it shows is they have a lack of concern. But let's put it this way. When they go to serve the second warrant on his home, they interrupt him while he's on the phone canceling porn channels that he had ordered 2 weeks before, which was after his wife went missing. So he's ordering porn channels now. Now he's trying to cancel it because I think he understands all this is coming out and he needs to just get rid of this as quick as he can.
I think he's just an idiot because he's paying for porn, but I get the point. Yeah, the microscope's on him and he needs to clean up his act. but he's now been pretty much established as a liar.
Obviously, we've brought up there's a trial that comes out of this.
The bodies.
It's about 4 months.
Yeah. And at this point, the police are filing a no-body murder charge against him.
Right. While they're doing that, I think it's because they feel they have no choice.
Yeah.
They want to move on him as quick as possible. With all the negative press about him, they're feeling confident. Because typically, when you have no body, you need something to show that there was a body.
Yeah.
And they just don't have that. So I think they're really hinging this on the public hates him now.
Yeah.
And we have all this damning evidence against him, at least in terms of his credibility.
Yeah.
And he was close, yeah. And he was the last one to see the victim. Yeah.
Misinformation or not, it looks bad for him. When does his child wash ashore?
Well, it's about 4 months.
Yeah.
The child washes ashore first, and then the next day is when they find
his wife's body.
So I don't know if they washed literally within moments or hours or within a day of each other, but it's fairly close.
Yeah,
it's just that they're about a mile apart in terms of location.
Yeah. And they're about a mile away from Berkeley Marina as the crow flies. I mean, I don't know, driving wise, if you're going to do it on Google Maps, I hope nobody goes out there and says it's 4.2 miles. You know, it's very close to the Berkeley Marina where these bodies show up. And they're in a decomposed state that shows they've been in the water for a long period of time. They figure out that his son was probably still within Lacey and through decomposition was expelled. Lacey is missing her head and her limbs, so it's just her torso. I think I have to say that she's missing these things, though, because if you were to weigh somebody down with anchors, where are you going to tie those things to? And if you tie them to the limbs and they slowly decompose, what's going to pop up? Their torso.
Yeah, it's quite possible that there was, I think, a quarter of an inch of
the tape.
Umbilical cord.
Oh.
That was still attached
to the child.
And they said because of the way it looked, it looked like it had been forced apart, not cut.
Which would go back to the natural expelling of the child.
Yeah. And I read about this tape that was around the child, and it didn't sound like someone put it on there deliberately. It looked like it kind of washed over and got stuck there because it was like around underneath the armpit and yeah. Over. That's random.
It was haphazard. The tape is a situation where I just assumed that she was taped up in a tarp, and when the baby's body came out, it just got entangled in the
right, because things probably slowly loosen and slowly come apart. It's all mixing together in a certain area.
Yeah, it's all the more graphic we'll get.
If you want to know more details, they're online. For whatever reason, they tried saying that someone had
delivered the baby and then taped it up and then deposited it. What is that?
It just doesn't make any sense. Well, they had moved on him. As soon as they knew that the bodies had shown up, they moved on him.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to arrest him because if he finds out first that they've come ashore or been located, he might flee.
Yep.
So tell me, how do they find Scott? Because as far as I know, in recent days, he had been very hard to locate.
He had. He had dyed his hair blonde and grew a goatee, changed his appearance, very Robert Durst style, and he was found at the country club. That's where he was arrested. Now, his vehicle was packed full of stuff. They found $15,000 on him cash, camping gear, business suits, Viagra, and a whole litany of other things.
Not all of those things were allowed to be presented at trial.
Yeah. But advocates for Scott will say he wasn't fleeing. So I would say he wasn't actively fleeing at that moment, but he sure looked like he was ready to. I don't have $15,000 in cash and camping gear in my vehicle at all points and times. I don't know how common sense doesn't prevail here. He wasn't fleeing. what was he doing then?
What chilled me about the situation was he had been asking Amber to meet him.
His like, mistress.
One of the things that he had said was that he was finally going to take the polygraph that he had said he was going to take and then didn't take. Mm-hmm. He said he was finally going to take it. He wanted her to meet him when he went to go take this polygraph.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the incidents where he said, I want to see you. Well, in his vehicle, he has a map of the city she lives in, of Fresno.
Why does he need a map of Fresno? He knows where she lives. They've been having an affair.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they'd only had so many dates. Their first date was on November 20th. In fact, Sean Sibley watches Amber's child so they can have this date. And I wonder if he'd really gone to her place or not.
Eh, that's possible. I'll concede to that.
But what I'm saying is he has a map of the city she lives and works in, and his car's loaded up with stuff, and he's asking her to meet with him. This is the woman he knows has turned against him.
Yeah. What was the plan?
Yeah.
And you brought up the polygraph. He had actually refused to take a polygraph from the police. Now, I don't put much stock in a polygraph myself. I know we kind of differ a little bit on that.
Well, to me, it has to do with the intent. If they feel confident in taking it, I think you have to give them some points.
Yeah. But when he was asked by reporters and Amber, why don't you want to take a polygraph? He said, the investigators told me not to talk about that. And then they changed the question to, would you be willing to take one? And he says, the investigators told me not to talk about that. Now, I know investigators tell you to keep your mouth shut, but really, you can't give an opinion? Like, come on, dude. That means, no, I'm not willing to take one because I don't think I'm going to pass it. I mean, just plain and simple. If you're not willing, that means you're concealing something. You're being deceptive. But to your point, what's his plan with Amber? Why does he want to all of a sudden meet her? And why is his car all loaded up like that? He's obviously about to flee. And is he going to do harm to her? Is that sort of the insinuation here?
I think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
And some would say, well, he's arguing for his innocence since day one. Why would he want to do anything to her?
Because she's a damning element to him. And if he's about to disappear, why not tie up loose ends?
Right. Oh, he's arrested, and he gets Mark Garagos for his attorney. I'm sure people have heard of him.
High-end attorney. High dollar. I think the trial goes pretty well.
Pretty well in what sense?
I mean, it goes just as I would expect most trials to go. I don't think there was vulgar displays of, you know, mishandling of evidence. I don't see it. Now, were there mistakes made? Does the prosecutor's theory have holes in it? Yes, it always does. We don't know what happened. So the prosecutor has to literally make it up. He has to deconstruct and make it up. And as usual, the prosecutor's theory isn't perfect ever, but people like to point out how wrong it was. And I'm thinking, well, I look at cases like Adnan and other cases where I can say the entire theory is pretty much wrong, but in this case, though, the prosecutor's pretty on par because he's using most of Scott's own placement for his theory.
Right. So when they went over the crime scene, as they put it, at least inside the house, they couldn't find blood evidence. They couldn't find any evidence that showed that there was a crime committed there.
Yeah.
There were odd things, but there wasn't anything that they could use to show that he had committed a crime there. So what they are theorizing is that at some point, either the night before, sometime after Lacey talks to her mom, which was in the evening at like 9:30 or something, that Scott must have either smothered her or strangled her and then wrapped her up in a tarp,
mm-hmm.
and then put her in the truck and then put the umbrellas over the tarp.
Because the umbrellas would be a perfect cover for a body, because they're the size of a body.
Yeah, they'll cover up that tarp. And then used his fishing trip to take her and the anchors.
Dump it.
And dump her into the bay. That's their theory.
Now, there's holes with their timeline, because She probably was still alive in the morning.
Now, they say this because of the computer, right?
Yeah, they say that because the computer was accessed and, you know, whatever. They also say because Martha Stewart was on the TV talking about meringue cookies.
Well, let's talk about that, because he could have turned the TV on and got that information. I guess what they felt was strong evidence was that the computer was used to access a couple of different sites that were sites that only she would look up.
Clothing.
And why would he think to do that?
Yeah.
So that's the question. Maybe she could have still been alive at that point to get on the computer.
But he was the only one that actually interacted with her that morning. Whether or not she was alive that morning, all we have to go on is, did the neighbors actually see her walking the dog?
I don't know how relevant this is. It's just another piece of the puzzle, maybe, or maybe it's not. But of all the computers in the house, only her computer was clean.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the other computers all had, I guess you could say, large amounts of pornography having been looked up on it. But what I found very strange was they said a good portion of it was either bondage or bestiality. And it was on all the computers except the one that she uses.
Well, because he doesn't use her computer, because he knows what a history means and she would see that. You start typing in the Gap clothing and you're going to get something bad.
Right. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
The trial's going on, and they're going through these things and what his defense attorney is trying to defend against and what the prosecution is framing, you know, not framing him, but structuring.
They're laying out their theory. Exactly. And so they're going through and trying to show how, you know, witnesses probably didn't see her, or they're going through all the evidence. The defense is trying to show that she was still around after he left,
mm-hmm.
so that he couldn't have done this in the way that they theorize. And the defense does a pretty good job of putting a big question mark on some of these witnesses that they've used.
Yeah.
Like the neighbor who says, oh, yeah, I saw the dog at this time, or what have you. So at this point, you think, well, if the defense is doing good, they must be winning the case. But as we all know by now, they're not that successful.
Well, they find that pair of pliers with a hair in it in the boat. And the hair turns out to be one of Lacey's hairs.
Well, that's in question because...
I know the defense questions it.
The way the defense questions it is they say, first of all, they claim that a hair was found in the pliers, and it wasn't just laying on the pliers. It was through the pliers.
It was in the clamp, like...
So when it was collected into evidence, later they find out that it was actually two hairs that were together. And then they did DNA testing on the hairs. All they can say is that they were probably a white person's, a Caucasian person's hairs.
They didn't actually get a match to Lacey or her family?
They said it was consistent.
Okay.
With Lacey's hair. It was not consistent with Scott's hair. Consistent, I'm guessing what this means based on other times
I've looked this up. Hair color, hair texture, those
things. They magnify it, they look at it, and they compare. And depending on the color of your hair and features of the hair, they can say, well, this looks very similar to this other hair that we collected from, say, her hairbrush.
I know that's not a perfect science.
I bet they can eliminate people easier than they can match people. So Scott having different colored hair than Lacey, then they can say, yeah, this one looks more brown or what have you. Doesn't look right.
My wife's hair is all over the house. She sheds like our three animals or three dogs. She just sheds her long black hair everywhere. But I'll tell you where it's never going to be. On a pair of pliers. She doesn't touch my tools at all. She doesn't even know what they are. So I felt that this was a little weird that a pair of pliers would have two hairs in it.
Well, remember, you brought it up. Supposedly, she visited the warehouse where the pliers were.
And she picked the pliers up and pulled some strands of hair out of her head, or he attacked her with the pliers because he thought it was a fun little game. Okay, it's possible.
Here's a problem I have with this scenario is, who knows, maybe people will disagree with this, but I would think that if you went with your husband to his warehouse and he had a boat you've never ever seen before, you would probably tell someone about it. Say, oh, Scott got a boat.
Yeah.
We're going to go out on the boat sometime maybe or what have you. That doesn't ever come up.
No. Also, the defense claims that the boat is so flimsy and unstable that he couldn't have taken her body out on the boat and dumped it over the side of the boat. And they'd get a very similar boat and go out on a pretty rocky weather day, and a guy clumsily attempts to toss a sandbag body over the side of the boat, and he almost comically capsizes the boat in his attempt. And this is the defense saying, yep, you couldn't have done it. And then you hear that the prosecution says, hey, why don't we redo that experiment with Scott's actual boat and with us present? And the defense refuses. So kind of a BS test, experiment, whatever you want to call it. It was just so ridiculous to watch. What were some of the other defense points they were bringing up?
So that there was a theory out there that she was abducted, and there are different reasons why she could have been abducted.
Was this the roving satanic cult or the burglar robbery thing across the street? I thought we covered roving satanic cults in our satanic panic episode.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you'll have people come up with these theories that there are satanic cults that are ritually killing people. I don't know really who's taking that seriously. There's just really no data to back that up.
It's just not happening.
It's just not happening. It was a thing back in the 80s.
It wasn't even a thing in the 80s.
Oh, it was a thing in terms of you had... It was hitting the news.
Yeah, it was hitting... It was the panic.
And now it's just... Yeah. There's no news on that front. Now, the house across the street being burglared, there were reports that there was a van there and that the back was open and there was a safe on the lawn.
This is the most probable theory because they do say that the neighbor across the street was their house was broken into that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that Lacey went out there with her dog, 8 months pregnant, and decided she was going to stop this crime, right? And go up and confront these people.
That's one of the theories is that Lacey tried to get involved here somehow. And
8 months pregnant?
Yeah.
No. It's the most plausible theory as far as an alternative one is there was something bad going down in that general vicinity. But I don't see how she would walk up or even try to. I mean, she would try to get away from this. Also, this whole thing goes down on Christmas Eve, which, again, I just don't know why he's leaving for the day on Christmas Eve, leaving his pregnant wife for the day on Christmas Eve. A friend of mine, Jack, said he wanted to go see a concert the other day before his wife gave birth, and I said I'd go with him. And then he said, you know what? I can't leave her. I can't go to the concert with you. Yeah, wife that pregnant. This whole scenario just seems a little odd to me.
I think it was Scott's sister stated that she knew Lacey, mm-hmm. and that on Christmas Eve, he would have had a honey-do list about a mile long.
You'd think.
She wouldn't let him go fishing or something like that. He would have stuff to do.
Wouldn't any husband have stuff to do?
Well,
they have things planned the next day. They have a whole family gathering planned the next day.
Well, on the 24th, they're actually supposed to be meeting Lacey's family for dinner.
Oh, so that night.
Well, you know how it is. Yeah. That whole...
Yeah.
When you're married and there's two sets yeah. of families and extended relatives and all that, you're literally from yeah. at least the 24th going 24 or 25. You're busy.
Yes.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is the defense can bring up these issues. We saw a van. People saw men following Lacey. But it's interesting, they didn't call that in.
No.
This was stuff that came up later.
Yeah, not the day of.
Yeah, we're not worried about a van being seen and then driving away. I mean, this is something you hear in a lot of cases, that there's a van seen. The yeah. police will actually state that the van that a lot of the witnesses saw was a Siemens.
Siemens.
They believe they've already explained a van that people saw away.
Okay, so
but it's in dispute.
Yeah. Let's say that there was a roving satanic cult or men robbing the house across the street, and that either one of these groups took Lacey and then took her body 90-minute drive to Berkeley Marina and dumped it right where he happened to be fishing that day.
To frame him. This is unbelievable to me because... this is a spur of the moment thing.
Yeah.
That's what they make it sound like. Like, oh, opportunity here.
Yeah.
And then, oh, it's going to be so easy to somehow, and I don't know how to explain this because the defense tries to argue that the child may have been born.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Okay, so hear this out. They're saying that somehow these bodies were submerged, that the child was born, and then somehow they hold on to these bodies where they'll be submerged, and then dump them.
On the shoreline.
On the shoreline, which they argue it's too far inland, which is, I think they said 15 feet.
Yeah.
And they said that the tide would not have brought the bodies that far in. But they say that that was proof that they were planted there to frame Scott.
So, one, the child's body was in much better condition than Lacey's, thus showing that it was inside of her and protected from the elements, and it appears to have just come out on its own, not born, not given birth. So yeah, no, that's that whole theory's gone because of science.
And why would they, I mean, why would someone plant the bodies a mile apart? This seems very
and why would they plant the child and then come back and plant Lacey's body a day later? So it appears that these bodies washed ashore naturally. Now, as far as the whole argument over they were way too far inland, when you look at the pictures, they don't look that far inland to me. And we went through the whole ocean, whatever, what's the site called? No.
It's the National Oceanographic.
Yeah.
It's NOAA.
Here's the thing is, in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice. In practice, there is. And you can say that the tide wasn't high enough all day long. The time frames they give, we don't know when they actually washed ashore. We don't know where they were planted. There's so many variables and factors here to just say, oh, the water wasn't high enough for these to wash ashore.
they looked pretty close to the shoreline in the photos to me. They looked feet. They didn't look 15 feet. They looked like they were just a few feet from where the water line was that day when they took the picture. Then they look a few feet away when they took a picture of high tide and low tide. Maybe it was just a little higher tide that day. Maybe there was wind that day. There's so many elements there. There's so many factors.
Yeah, they also tried to say that since Lacey had some broken ribs, that that's where if someone had cut her open, that they could have damaged her ribs. But damage to a body that's out in the water can happen.
Well, there was a rocky shoreline. Her body could have been damaged washing ashore.
Right.
Okay, so is it the police that are planting the bodies, or is it a satanic cult? Who's planting these bodies?
They never claim that it's the police.
Okay. This isn't Manitowoc County here. This is Northern California, and the police are doing a fantastic job, and they're doing everything they can to file murder charges against a man who obviously is the prime suspect without a body.
So they're trying to show that there are other suspects here. There are other scenarios by which she could have been killed. But the prosecution is there to remind everyone that you can say all these things, but you're still looking at a guy who drove 90 miles. The day she went missing. And then when the bodies are finally discovered, they're in that same area.
Yeah.
And it's that simple.
It really is. They find him guilty and they sentence him to death, which is pretty harsh.
What do you think prompted that? Because I feel it's the pregnancy equation.
It is.
I guess you could say the pregnancy factor.
Yeah. Considered like a double murder there.
No, it is. I mean, he's charged with the death of
both Connor,
Lacey and Connor.
Yeah.
Connor was the name that I believe Lacey had given to the son, or what would have been their son.
Yeah. I was only slightly surprised that they found him guilty and gave him the death penalty.
I would say that I was not surprised that he's found guilty, but I am surprised by the death penalty.
Yeah.
Only in the fact that when you have a case like this where they don't have a smoking gun, they have a decent circumstantial case showing that he had the opportunity, he had the means, he may have had a motive, which we'll get to shortly, but I think they did a good job. The prosecution showed this is the best way to explain it. If you think about it, he's supposedly leaving to go fish and she's curling her hair and then going to mop and then going to walk the dog. Some things that you may not know, she, at least around that time, had canceled plans because she said her feet were bothering her.
She wasn't feeling good, which that happens when you're pregnant.
So would she really have gone out walking the dog?
It's possible.
And some people went along where she supposedly was going to go, and they said, I don't see her doing this because it's too steep.
Yeah.
It just seems highly unlikely that she would have walked out and within, I mean, if you really look at the timeline, within about, what, 10 or 15 minutes, she's abducted?
That's the window of time.
It just feels like such a short amount of time, whatever it was, for her to suddenly go missing. I think that's why it's easy to understand he gets found guilty. I'm just saying, since it's so circumstantial, which, again, for anyone that doesn't know, circumstantial is evidence that you can use with other circumstantial evidence. You can use it to kind of show your theory, but it's not the same as when there's a rape committed.
Physical evidence.
You have DNA in the person and you can test that.
Yeah.
That is not circumstantial. Same thing as you had multiple witnesses witness a guy shoot some reporters, you know, that's not circumstantial at all. But when you have, oh, he made these concrete anchors and those are missing and he took his boat out when he's not known to be a fisherman, you can tie all this stuff together and going out on a day when he probably should have been home helping her get things ready. So it's highly suspicious. It supports their theory. When we get into, let's talk about motive. I mean, we don't have to have a motive here, but what do you think the motive is?
He didn't want to have a life with Lacey and he didn't want to have a child. He obviously wasn't happy with Lacey. He wouldn't be having affairs if he was. And what's his opinion on a child?
There are witness statements, people who were happy for Lacey and Scott, who would talk to Scott and say, wow. What was it like when you found out she was pregnant? What were you hoping for? And he would say, oh, I was hoping for infertility. And then someone else at one point asked him, oh, you know, what do you think? You're going to be able to go out and throw the ball around with your son in the backyard. And he goes, oh, I've already got friends to do that with me.
This reminds me so much of the Casey Anthony case from those kind of statements, because she made very similar statements about not wanting a child.
The child was slowing down her life.
Yeah. And not only is it that, but both of them, the deceased body is found within their general vicinity. Both of them have kind of shaky alibis. But here's where the differences kind of stop. Whereas Scott, his statements and location check out, whereas Casey Anthony, it doesn't. He actually reports the missing wife immediately, whereas...
Well,
immediately, as in Casey Anthony...
He lets somebody know. Yeah. She doesn't.
Casey Anthony, it's weeks before that comes out. His statements pretty much check out, whereas Casey, she makes up people that don't even exist in some weird scenario. They have about the same amount of physical evidence, which is very small amount of physical evidence, but they have more circumstantial. Yet Casey walks and Scott's sentenced to death. I personally think they had more against Casey than they did Scott.
I think they actually had more against Scott simply because of where he went and what he was doing. So they had this time frame where they figured he was doing all this. They know what day it happened, basically. They know when he would have taken her, where he would have taken her.
So because
the body showing up there verify that.
Because he said, I went to the marina and the body shows up there, therefore it actually is worse for him.
His first statement, he tells three or four people he went golfing.
Yeah.
It's after that he starts telling people he went to the marina. By the time the cop shows up, he hands that person his landing ticket. His mother, he's on the phone with his mother at some point. I think she's just really upset. But she says something like, no one would be dumb enough to put the bodies in where their alibi is.
Yeah.
Not even you, Scott. Not even you, Scott.
Yeah.
There's also a time, and this could cut either way, but she calls him at one point and says, yep, they were diving again, but they didn't find him. They didn't find Lacey, and you can hear him whistle.
Yeah. Like, whew. That was close.
Now, I don't know about you, but if someone just described it to me, I could maybe see where he's like, okay, they're not dead.
Yeah.
They've not been found, so there's still hope. When you actually hear that whistle, to me, it's really bad. It's like, whoa, I dodged a bullet there.
It sounds horrible.
It's a horrible whistle.
Yeah. It's almost as bad as Robert Durst's reaction when he is shown the letters and he starts burping and freaking out and runs into the bathroom with his mic still on. That's what it reminded me of. It was the same sort of reaction.
In essence, when you talk about the trial, there are various reasons why he was probably convicted. As we've already said, there's no physical evidence tying him to the crime. There's just circumstantial evidence. Now, in all my reading, I saw the same things popping up for why he probably was found guilty. I guess the largest factor in this, and the reason why probably Amber Fry was such a big deal, was because this man would just, he would lie so often and lie to so many people about so many different things that he had no credibility.
He's a liar. I mean, you can say, oh, his story checks out because he says he's here and there's a ticket. He says he's there. There's a receipt. He says Martha Stewart's on. But I don't care. The body shows up where he says he was.
Right. What are the odds of that? Now, they say, oh, well, by that time, everyone knew he had been there. But so, that's a lot of work for a transient or a satanic cult member or a thief to manage these bodies and then to plant them later on. That's a lot of work. And why is he worth it again?
Yeah.
So they can get away with what? Okay, so we've kind of established that, but I also read something interesting, which was this idea that Mark Garagos is to blame.
His defense was weak or just didn't, he didn't do enough for him?
No, that he told everybody that he was going to show that Scott didn't do it.
Oh, he over-promised and under-delivered?
Yes, I would say there were a lot of little things he did right, but by starting off on that foot, he moved the burden of proof, and this isn't my idea, he moved the burden of proof off of the prosecution onto the defense. So yeah. Here you have the defense team. Normally they have a little bit of an advantage because the burden of proof is on the prosecution. The defense can just sort of sit back and call everything into question and say, well, we can explain it this way, or we can explain this that way, and we have a witness that counters your guy, and we have this expert coming in who disagrees with your expert.
Mm-hmm.
And then the jury sit back and go, wow, there's a lot of doubt here.
Yeah.
But when you say, oh, I'm going to show, and then you don't because he didn't.
No. There was an interaction between the prosecution and the defense, wasn't there?
Yes, we'll get to that in a moment. So, of course, the jury's looking at us and saying, we don't see where you're showing us.
Yeah.
And man, Scott does look guilty.
Yeah. They're waiting for the mic drop. They're waiting for the bombshell. They're waiting for the proof.
There is a moment where the prosecutor sends one of his guys over who knows one of the defense team members and says, go over there. If they've got evidence that shows that Scott didn't do this, we should know about it. Because that changes everything. He goes over there and he says, hey, man, how's it going? And they handshake. And he says, you guys have something that shows Scott's innocent. Let's deal with it. Let's tell us what it is and we'll go from there. And he looks at him and he says, go fuck yourself.
And then he says, don't shoot the messenger. And he said, well, go tell whoever sent you over here.
And how did you take that? Because I'm reading this and I'm thinking, wow, talk about a backfire on the defense.
Well, people would say, well, they're the enemy. And even if they're extending an olive branch or whatever, you're the enemy. You're the other side. You think he's guilty. So go F yourself. But to me, it's they extended an offer. They were like, what do you have that we don't know about? And they got nothing. Just like when Scott told Amber, all will be revealed and everything will be explained once they find my wife. And we got nothing. And that's what happens over and over again in this case, is they promise things that they do not deliver on.
Yeah, when you read, if you just go to one of these sites that are pro other theories, if you read all that stuff and that's all you read, it can be very convincing.
They have a narrative.
But once you start actually looking at the evidence, it all sort of just falls apart, either from logic or through science.
Their narrative totally excludes common sense, which is, dude said, I went fishing here, and that's where his wife's dead body ends up. And they say it's planted there. But again, common sense isn't satanic cult. Submerged it underwater and then, I mean, this is, brain hurts.
Yeah, because that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
What really bothered me about the go F yourself part was they end up losing this case bad.
Horribly. Their guy's sentenced to death.
When he's smugly smiling and he's saying, go fuck yourself, he thinks he's got something over him. He doesn't, because they never offer it. There was, like you said, there's no mic drop moment where they go, bam, drop the mic, and then it's over. No, that never happened because they don't have that. And in a case like this where it's all he said, she said, and this circumstance and this coincidence, it comes down to what you said, which is essentially Occam's razor. Yeah. What makes the most sense here? No one knows what was going on in their house. They were the only two people in it. And it would be very easy for him to kill her in the house, take her immediately out to the vehicle, start throwing umbrellas on her, head out, drop the dog off.
And they say that he had to have done all this in broad daylight, whether it be in the driveway or at the warehouse. And all I'm thinking is, it's Christmas Eve. There's not that many people out on Christmas Eve.
It's not a normal day.
No.
People are otherwise occupied.
That's the perfect day to commit this crime, to commit a murder, to transfer a body in broad daylight. Kind of works.
People are visiting family or cleaning and getting ready for family. they're not hanging out outside washing their vehicles or... No. I guess the question is, if he had had a better lawyer, someone who didn't overpromise, underdeliver, could the outcome be different?
I think so.
What do you think the outcome could have been at best?
Well, there was some question about jury members. They could have maybe had some of the jurors thrown out of the jury box. They could have objected to more of the prosecution's theories or what they claim is misinformation. They could have done a few more things like that. At the end of the day, I think common sense prevails. They might have been able to get him off. I mean, Casey Anthony walked. And that's where I say they could have proven doubt.
I think it's difficult for a man to get off in this circumstance. I firmly believe that he would have been found guilty no matter what they did. I do think that in most other scenarios, they would have avoided the death penalty.
Yeah.
And that's just, I have no proof of this. I'm just saying, I think that because they overpromised, underdelivered, and you add in what Scott's behavior was like, yeah, I think they had no sympathy for him. They didn't have any inkling that there was a good bone in his body, and they just thought he's scum and he did this horrible thing. I don't think there's any way to make the case less prejudicial.
There isn't.
I know that there has been arguments about, well, they shouldn't have been able to say this, they shouldn't have been able to show that.
Then object to it.
No, but that's where the judge comes in. If you look at what the judge did, the judge allowed a lot of things that were called into question by the defense, just said overruled or whatever.
That happens in every case.
I know it happens. Saying is,
yeah.
To me, a lot of this was brought on by Scott himself.
Yeah.
So I think no matter how good the lawyer was, he's anchored by this terrible, terrible suspect. That's why he's convicted.
What do you think about Stephen Avery?
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all 6 episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.